listening to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. I'm Doug Becker. On April 10th, 2022, French voters went to the polls for presidential elections. Like so many countries, the first round of elections are multi-party. And if no candidate receives 50% of the vote, then a second round of elections is held with the top two finishers. In a repeat of the 2017 elections, incumbent Emmanuel Macron received the most votes but fell short of the 50% threshold and once again will run against the National Front candidate Marine Le Pen. This election will be held on April the 24th. What's at stake is, at least in part, French participation in the European Union and in NATO, questions of French identity, certainly economic issues are casting a pretty significant shadow, and Le Pen herself is well known as a white nationalist in her appeal to French voters. On today's show, we will discuss the political and social developments in France and what we're watching in the outcomes on the April 24th elections. Our panel today is Martin Shane, professor of politics emeritus at New York University. He is the author of The Politics of Immigration in France, Britain, and the United States, A Comparative Study, and Shadows Over Europe, The Development and Impact of the Extreme Right in Europe. Patrick Chamorral is senior resident scholar and lecturer at the Stanford Center in Washington. He's the author of France's Vanishing Center and the French Presidential Election, Can Macron Stay Ahead of the Pack? And Flora MacDonald, a freelance journalist who works in print and radio and the author of a recent piece, The Malaise Poisoning French Politics in Foreign Policy Magazine. Thank you all for joining us. Patrick, I will ask you first, what happened in the first round of the elections and how different, you know, was that from the 2017 elections?
Lots has happened, even though it looks like, you know, we have the same two candidates in the runoff. So it looks like stability, but actually it is not. What's happened is that the two parties that had dominated the Fifth Republic, the Socialist Party and the Neo-Gaullist Party, have weakened even further than they had in 2017. 2017, the Socialist Party has come down to a very low level of 6%. And this time it's the turn of the center-right, you know, Neo-Gaullist Party, Les Républicains, who last time, you know, did 19% after a scandal hit its candidate, which was the favorite to win the election. So, but before the scandal, it was close to 30%. So 30%, 19%, and this time it's 4.7% for that party's candidate, Valérie Pécresse. So we have this. We have Macron, who is increasing his score by about between 3 and 4% compared with last time. We have Marine Le Pen, who stays about the same. And Mélenchon, the far left candidate, who is rising a little bit by a couple of points from last time. So and then we have three candidates who gather together about 50% of the vote, and the rest of the candidates, the field, and there we have 12 candidates, is far behind, you know, below 10%. And one of the things that has happened during this campaign is that, you know, for the first time, Marine Le Pen has been challenged on immigration and crime and French identity by another candidate, Eric Zemmour. And they have been, very close in the polls during the whole campaign. But gradually, Marine Le Pen has gone up, and at the expense of Eric Zemmour. So what has happened is that you have had a strong strategic vote in favor of Macron at the detriment of Valérie Pécresse, in favor of Marine Le Pen at the detriment of Eric Zemmour, and in favor of Mélenchon at the detriment, well, of all the rest of the left, which is not very much. I mean, it's a lot in terms of candidacies, but it was a very low score. So fundamentally, we have now French politics organized around three poles, you know, the center with Macron, and then the far right and the far left, and nothing in between. I mean, nothing on the immediate right or immediate left of Macron. The second thing against, you know, that French politics seems to have reorganized itself is that even more than the last time, you have a polity which is organized around class. You know, it's not so much left versus right anymore. I mean, for Marine Le Pen or for Emmanuel Macron, it's populism versus progressivism. But really what it is, it's class. And you see that the sociological basis of the Macron and Le Pen classes votes are very, very polarized by levels of education, you know, level of income, and also age. You know, Le Pen and Mélenchon have really been the best at draining, you know, the young vote. So basically, we have, in terms of age and socioeconomic background, a very, very polarized France, very different sociological basis between the two candidates, very different projects for the country, very different policies. So this is, in many ways, an accentuation of the realignment that started in 2017.
And Martin Shane, part of the aspect of the realignment that kind of surprised observers was the complete collapse of the traditional political parties. And so you have these new political parties. But I know in 2017 as well, the issue of immigration played a pretty substantial role. Immigration, asylum seekers, you know, kind of axiomatic, the Syrian civil war certainly played a role in French politics with asylum seekers making their way into France. How much is that continuing to be an issue in French politics?
Well, it's certainly an issue, and it continues to be an issue. But really, if you look at these surveys leading up to the elections, what we really see is that what French voters care most about is not immigration, although they certainly care about immigration, is they care most about socioeconomic issues. And what is striking to me, and I agree with you, I think that what is really very, very striking is that there is a continuation of a trend that began some time ago. And that is that the far right party, that is what had been called Front National, which is now called Rassemblement National, is really the working class party of France, which, I mean, this is the party to which French workers, both blue collar and white collar workers, give most of their votes, not a majority of their votes, but most of their votes. That is, they've really taken the place of what the Communist Party used to be as an expression of both identity issues and socioeconomic issues. That's the first thing. The second thing is that it's a little tricky adding up numbers. You begin to add up numbers between Mélenchon and Marine Le Pen and Éric Zemmour, and you begin to see a rather frightening trend, and that is that for the first time in many years since the beginning of the Fifth Republic, the parties that are attracting, that if you can, I'll get to whether they're parties or not, but the parties that are attracting most of the votes are what we might essentially call anti-constitutional parties. That is, parties that bring into question the very foundations of the Fifth Republic itself. It's the second thing. The third thing is that, and here I want to continue what we've just been discussing, and that is the Fifth Republic parties, the classical Fifth Republic parties, are gone. I mean, they're really gone. They're gone in the sense that the remnants of the Gaullist Party now attracts 5% of the vote, more or less. The Socialist Party, 5% of the vote, more or less. The classical parties of the Fifth Republic, they have disappeared and gotten, and their voters have gotten gobbled up in a sense by personalities, by Marine Le Pen, who strangely leads a party that actually exists. That is, it has a party there's a party with a structure, with local elected officials, with officials at the mid-range level. Éric Zemmour does not lead a political party and nevertheless managed to attract a substantial amount of the vote. And we're looking into a kind of volatile situation in which political parties are not organizing and anchoring the electorate. So in this kind of situation, you would expect that voters would just stay home, which is what usually happens. That is, there would be very high levels of abstention. Well, in the French sense, the levels of abstention are reasonably high, but not excessively high, but we'll see what happens in the second round. So that we seem, in some sense, we seem to have come full circle with the Fifth Republic. From the beginning, where a Gaullist non-party really wreaked havoc with the traditional parties of the Fourth Republic, through a situation where the Fifth Republic became stabilized, in which there was a sometime majority Gaullist party with a very substantial socialist party that built up under Mitterrand, and various parties of the center that emerged. Suddenly, this relatively stable party situation no longer exists. And me, I get very frightened when I see this. I get very frightened when I see this because when political parties no longer exist, then the political landscape is opened up to people like Marine Le Pen, to people like Éric Zemmour, and to people like, if I may say so, Mélenchon himself, who are really very demagogic. It doesn't matter what their issues are. Their issues may be right, their issues may be wrong, but their style is a very demagogic, and if we want to be generous, popular style. So I'm not quite sure, I'd like to know what everybody else thinks, but I find it somewhat destabilizing. Perhaps the most stable figure is the present president of the Republic, Macron, who has managed to cobble together a party with a very strange name. I'm not sure that this cobbled together party will actually hold together come the legislative elections, because it has some depth, but not a great deal of depth when you get below the national level.
And we've been discussing this question of, you know, this political alignment question, the role of parties, the role of elections. But Fleur MacDonald, I want to bring you in. You wrote a piece entitled "The Malaise Poisoning French Politics." So I guess my question, first of all, is what is that malaise? What's going on within French society that might be fueling some of these political responses?
I would start off by saying that I don't think the French have ever been very good at being happy. I mean, I say that with a British accent, but my mother is French, so I feel like I have personal knowledge of it. But it's not, happiness is not, I don't think it's a national characteristic. You wouldn't look at a French person and think that's a happy person. I think the French pride themselves on other characteristics. And if I'm going to be really honest, and Patrick, you might disagree with me here, I think that the French are a nation of râleurs, so complainers. That's a national characteristic that I think.
I agree with that.
So they're a nation of complainers. Yeah. So I think that, you know, you see it in the political system. Very few presidents get re-elected because the French don't like to look on the good side of life, even though, you know, there are many wonderful things about living in France. I live in France. So I wrote this piece because a word, I kept on hearing a word. So there's a new slang word called that's le seum. And it basically means, you would say, j'ai le seum, so I'm unhappy, would be the basic translation. And it's really catching on. You'll see it in newspaper headlines. You'll see lots of young people using it. Even old people are having to use it. There was a glossary in Le Figaro, which is the right-leaning newspaper, last year that was explaining this word for adults who might be a bit sort of bemused by their teenage children's slang. And I really thought that this word, which kind of means, you know, it just basically means life is not fair, I am unhappy. I really thought it captured something of a French mindset, which isn't especially new. I mean, the French are very good at coming up with words for being unhappy. I mean, there are many words that have crept into English, like ennui, malaise. Their most famous poet, Baudelaire, I mean, he wrote, he popularized the word spleen. And that, again, is just this general feeling of dissatisfaction. Of course, I don't think that, you know, current events in France and in the world have made things better. So the pandemic, of course, the Ukraine crisis. But I would say there's nothing new in the French complaining.
You're listening to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. We're discussing the French elections and French society with Martin Shane of New York University, Patrick Chamorel of the Stanford Center in Washington, and Fleur McDonald, a freelance journalist working in print and radio. And Patrick, to sort of follow up on that, unhappiness certainly seems to be broadened, not just in France, but a number of places around the world. But I've heard in particular some of the economic challenges that France is facing, you know, questions of inflation, questions of employment, a lot of this emerging out of the pandemic. Most of the popular press here are suggesting that the polls narrowed in part because economic indicators really supported Le Pen. How accurate is that?
It might not be totally accurate, I'm afraid. By the way, the French on an individual level, you know, they will tell you that they are happy in their private lives. What they are unhappy about and concerned and pessimistic about is the future of the country, you know, the future of French society to hold together. But some people are probably more unhappy than others, and that's the electorate of Marine Le Pen and Jean-Luc Mélenchon. Because they are they have been struggling economically. They are, you know, what people sometimes mention, you know, say describes as the losers of globalization. And the Macron's electorates are much different in that respect. They are the winners of globalization, to simplify. So I think actually that Macron has probably not done a bad job on economic policy. He's done economic liberal reforms that are always very controversial in France, but he's actually done some of them, not all of them successfully. The way he approached the economic fallout of COVID has been fairly popular. You know, he said, you know, whatever it costs, so people are happy when they hear that. That means that he's going to save jobs and companies and businesses. But of course, you know, people have also turned against Macron's on economic policies, especially, you know, the traditional socialist after he diluted the wealth tax early in his term. And, you know, people on the left started to call him the president of the rich, which is probably one of the worst insults you can voice in French politics. You know, Sarkozy was the victim of the same of the slogan in the past. So anyway, I think that, you know, France has rebounded pretty well from the COVID crisis, and unemployment is a little lower than it used to be before that crisis. Economic growth is among the best in Europe. So I don't think that, except for, you know, I don't think I would blame, you know, Macron for a bad economic climate. I mean, people in France are extremely sensitive to social inequalities, even though, you know, French society is more equal than probably any of the Western democracies, except maybe in Scandinavia. But as, you know, Tocqueville said, you know, the more you equal, the less you can tolerate the remaining inequalities. Anyway, the French will, I agree with Fleur, always be unhappy about, you know, some shortcomings in inequalities. Anyway, so it's a very mixed legacy that on economics that Macron is leaving us with, but I don't think it's as bad as people sometimes say.
To be honest, I mean, it doesn't really matter. It doesn't really matter what the facts are, does it? It just matters what people's feelings are. And I think that, you know, when you look when you look at the Gilets Jaunes protests, that was a show of unhappiness. And nothing seems to have changed since then. You know, Macron gave, he toured the country and gave some very long speeches at every town hall. But people, those people that were complaining, that were gathering on the roundabouts, they don't feel like they've been listened to or anything has changed. So you can talk about what economists think, you can talk about facts, but come on, we're living in the modern world, facts don't matter.
And certainly narratives can persist, that once there's a narrative that Macron is only representing, you know, the elites. Actually, conversation we were having, you know, before we started recording, there was this reference that Macron's revolution was a revolution of the elites. And Martin Shane, how accurate is that, at least as a perception, that Macron and certainly the traditional political parties had just forgotten about the working class?
Malaise Française is really very interesting. I was looking at some stuff that I had written back in the 1990s. One of them was an article, exactly that phrase, and it was one of the most talked about phrases in the 1990s. It's not something we ordinarily use in American politics, but it's used consistently in French politics to describe not just a state of mind, but a state of politics. And what strikes me about Macron is that, I mean, there haven't been any revolutionary changes in Macron during the years that Macron has been president. There have been changes that had begun before and that continued under Macron. And I was trying to make some sense out of it. And one of the best things you can say about Macron is that he defended what was in many ways what was best in France. That is, the changes that had taken place that were the best. And during his presidency, he tried to ease the changes that were taking place, over which, in fact, he had very little control. The Gilets Jaunes actually is a very, very interesting example. I mean, these were, you know, very substantial demonstrations in which people from the provinces descended upon Paris and clogged up traffic and created nasty shutdowns all over the place. And what exactly were they protesting? But they were protesting with the changes that were taking place in a country that is basically highly decentralized with a centralized administration in a centralized state. It's decentralized in the sense that it's the country in Europe with the largest number of communes, of localities per capita of any country in Europe. I mean, there are localities in France with 50 or 60 people, large numbers of them. And the movement to preserve these places together with their railway stops and their highways and their subsidies is a movement that's been going on since the 1970s. Yes, this is what the Gilets Jaunes represent. They represent not just changes they want to see happening in France, but a protest against changes over which there is relatively little control. I mean, you can call these changes modernization if you like. If you like them, or if you don't like them, you can call them disintegration of the best of France. There's a kind of constant and consistent protest in France that simmers, and that has been simmering ever since the late 1950s over changes in French society and the French economy. So that's the first thing. The second, and yes, this is part of the malaise. It's the continuing malaise that will inevitably continue. The other thing is that there has been a basic shift in French politics. I don't know how to emphasize this more strongly. And that is, that shift has been that the classe populaire, you know, the working classes, if you like, have shifted their allegiances from left more or less to right. And that is a big thing. And it didn't happen yesterday. It's been happening slowly over time, and sometimes very accentuated, as with the populism of Marine Le Pen. And the third thing that's been happening is that the loyalties to political parties simply don't exist anymore, and that people pay dues and they belong to political parties, and the political parties become part of their life. This is not something that is something that has been declining in France for some time. So here we have Macron, the person who won last time with 2/3 of the vote in the second round of the presidential election, a person essentially without a political party. That is a person who heads a movement called the Republican Movement, the Republic Moving Forward, La République en Marche. La République is not en marche. And Macron, who is very interesting because in fact he's very traditional, he comes from the elite. And the people around him are all people from Sciences Po and people who come from the classical political elite in France. Are they tone deaf? I don't know. I'm not so sure they're tone deaf. They may not have any idea what to do, or they may not have really good ideas about what to do to make their governance seem less elitist. But I don't think this is more of an elitist government than any other recent government in France that I can think of. I mean, I don't know of any recent government in France that has been, populaire in the French sense of the word. So yeah, I mean, a lot of it is images. And the image that Macron has projected, which is very unfortunate, is that he's projected an image of being in favor of the rich. I don't think that's particularly true, although I don't think it's any more true than it has been of any other recent French government. So yeah, that's malaise.
And Fleur MacDonald, how much is this sort of anger, this unhappiness within French society then just projected on anybody who happens to be in power? So there's this expectation that if the unhappiness is broadly just sort of unhappiness with the direction of the country, it seems the country is always poised to replace whoever's in power with whoever's running against them.
That certainly holds true. I mean, to go back to what Martin was saying, and he used the word tone deaf, and I would say, and I really want to go back to the Gilets Jaunes, because I think that they're really crucial to a lot of what's happening now. And, people thought that Macron had tamed them, but I don't think he has. So, I mean, when Martin said tone deaf, I just think that the current government aren't listening. So when the Gilets Jaunes happened, Macron tried to defuse the situation by getting all the communes to write cahiers de doléances, which were basically notebooks in every commune where people could come in and explain why they were unhappy. And it was what the Ancien Régime did just before the revolution in 1789. So it was, it basically showed how serious the situation was in a certain way. So you had these cahiers de doléances where people complained about their quality of life. They complained about the wealth tax. They complained about the political system. And I feel that Marine Le Pen has read them. She has digested them. And she is the one that is, talking the language of those people. I think that in the last year or so, she's shown herself to be a more clever politician than many of us gave her credit for. I'm not talking about her ideas here. I'm just talking about her as a politician. And, if you think about 2017, Macron was as we've just said, he was the economist. He was the safe pair of hands when it came to the economy. He'd worked at Rothschild. He'd come out of INA. And Marine Le Pen basically lost that election because she didn't have any credibility when it came to the economy. And it feels like that situation has reversed because Marine Le Pen has been paying attention to what people have been saying. And so she decided to talk about cost of living. And that's what the Gilets Jaunes was about. They started those protests because the price of fuel had risen too much. And the people in Paris, you just think either you're wealthy enough to afford it or you've got transport. You've got public transport. You can get around on your scooter, whatever. But if you're talking about in rural areas, people use their car. Those kind of price changes make a difference. public transport, like public buses, are few and far between. Those are elements of normal life that are really important to a lot of French people that, you know, Macron and his government didn't get at first. Yeah, I think the revolution of the Gilets Jaunes is still happening. And Marine Le Pen has shown herself quite, you know, to be a crafty politician by listening.
And Patrick, you had a response as well.
No, I agree with this, with the fact that the Gilets Jaunes has been a very revealing crisis. I myself, you know, if I may say so, wrote a long article in the Journal of Democracy about it. And yes, we're still facing a spike in the price of gas, just like, you know, like which was the trigger of the Gilets Jaunes. It's kind of an interesting anecdote, even though it is more than an anecdote. I would say that, you know, economic issues have been, of course, very important, you know, with in the Gilets Jaunes and consequently and since then, that again Macron pushed, you know, three priorities in since the beginning of his presidency, like Europe, liberal economic reforms, and cultural progressivism. These are priorities that that are not backed by a majority of the people. In addition, you know, there was Macron's own style. Remember that the Gilets Jaunes crisis was triggered not just by the spike of the price of gas, but just before that, he had made, you know, very insensitive statements, to working class people, and revealed also the fact that his revolution in politics had not really taken place, you know, with the so-called Benalla affair, which was about his bodyguard, and you know, which really showed how much favoritism he practiced at the Élysée Palace. No more, of course, than his predecessor. It's just that he had pledged that he would revolutionize the political system, the political culture, that it would be more ethical, more transparent, and that is maybe one of the greatest failures of his presidency, in addition to, of course, other aspects of the political of his, you know, his party, as Martin said, you know, has been really a very, very weak political party. So it's economics, but it's also Macron's personality. I mean, he's improved on that, but probably too little and too late. And as Fleur rightly said, Marine Le Pen has a big advantage on that, in the sense that she's closer to the people and understand their struggles.
And with that, we will take a break. And when we return, we're going to explore how much the Russian invasion of Ukraine, the role that Vladimir Putin could potentially play in this next round of French elections. So please stay tuned. Scholar Circle. I'm Doug Becker. We're discussing today the French elections. The first round was on April the 10th of 2022, the next one coming up in April the 24th. And our guests today are Martin Shane of New York University, Patrick Chamorel of the Stanford Center in Washington, and Fleur McDonald, a freelance journalist working in print and radio. Thank you all again for joining us. And Martin Shane, I know that the Russian invasion of Ukraine has changed politics, or at least had an impact on politics really throughout the Western world, throughout Europe, throughout the United States, certainly as well. What kind of impact has the invasion played in the French election?
Well, there are two aspects of this. One of them is the Russian invasion itself. And I think the impact of that, from what I can see, has been minimal. Macron had hoped that the leadership that he'd shown would actually work to his advantage, and maybe it has, but this is not an election about foreign policy issues. It's an election about domestic issues, which brings me to the second point, and that is the continuing impact of the Russian invasion is a spike in immigration. And other countries within the European Union, and now increasingly France, are welcoming into their borders, are welcoming refugees from Ukraine. These may be temporary refugees, that is, they are largely, not entirely, they are largely women and children and elderly people who are less challenging to the labor market than, for example, if they included large numbers of men, and large numbers of these refugees may in fact go back if there is a Ukraine to go back to. But nevertheless, the secondary impact is the increase in immigration, which feeds into the rhetoric, obviously, of Marine Le Pen. I must say one of the things that has struck me most about the surveys about the second round of this election is the very large percentage of Mélenchon voters who say that they will vote for Marine Le Pen. And I haven't seen the detail about why they're going to vote for Marine Le Pen, but I suspect that immigration, or at least the potential of immigration, has a great deal to do with that. So yeah, this is very, very tricky. I mean, that Marine Le Pen has no credibility with regard to the European Union, and that Macron has considerable credibility with regard to the European Union, may play to his advantage or may not. I mean, it's the issue of immigration and potential immigration, I think. A lot hinges on that.
And Patrick, I know that prior to the invasion, there was an expectation that Le Pen's closer relationship with Vladimir Putin was going to play as a campaign issue. Since the invasion, there's been certainly an attempt on the part of the National Front to downplay that connection. Is it a connection that's having any sort of traction in French society, in the French electorate? Is there any?
Yeah, concern? I mean, there are many paradoxes here. Of course, you know, Macron's approval rating jumped actually about, between 4 and 8 percentage points, points after the invasion of Ukraine. Because you remember that he's also the president of the European Union, so he has huge exposure in this crisis. And it's a one-sided issue. Most people are, of course, for Ukraine and critical of Putin. So Marine Le Pen didn't suffer from it because, again, her main issue in the campaign has been purchasing power, and that, you know, the Ukraine crisis drove the prices of gas up and food up, and that kind of vindicated her whole argument about the fact that people are struggling and the cost of living is too high and et cetera. So it actually turned into an advantage to Marine Le Pen, even though she had been sympathetic to the views of Putin in the past and maybe still today. It was not an advantage for Zemmour, and I think just because Marine Le Pen sucked out, all of his momentum. It was not, and also Mélenchon, because of the strategic vote at the end of the campaign in favor of Mélenchon on the left. I think that he rode, this Ukraine crisis, which could have hurt him, of course, because he had been also sympathetic to Putin in the past. But so basically, Le Pen, benefited from it. Zemmour, and so did Mélenchon in a way, but more indirectly, and Zemmour really suffered from it. Now, to try to answer Martin's question about why Mélenchon voters are, about 27%, depends, between 25 and 30% of them say that they intend to vote for Le Pen in the runoff. Yes, it's of course very interesting for people from the far left to want to do that, but I think it's really a reflection of the new structure of French politics, which is really class based, and many people say, well, Marine Le Pen is doing, he really wants to help the, the working class and working people. Actually, she's the candidate that has received the most votes, among acting, working people, because Macron got lots among pensioners, retirees. So there is this aspect of class, and then of course there is the aspect of populism. The fact that these two candidates, Mélenchon or Le Pen, they just want to rock the political scene, and they are very anti-Macron. And so the anti-Macron vote is actually the main, maybe alongside the economic issues, is the main drive in Marine Le Pen's campaign. So remember, the electorate of Mélenchon, of course, is very diverse, it's very composite, unlike that of Le Pen, which is mostly working class, and Mélenchon mostly. Mélenchon has, yes, some working class. He has also lots of middle class. He has lots of young people. He has lots of, actually, most of the immigrant families, by far. And he has some people who think that they have studied in university, etc., but didn't get the job that they could have expected and had hoped for, and they put it on equal society, on unfair society. So anyway, it's a very complex electorate, and that's why it's so difficult to see how it's going to be redistributed between Marine Le Pen and Mélenchon. But yes, it's a surprise that so many of them want to vote Marine Le Pen, but I think for the reason that I mentioned. Yeah.
Yes, and Claire MacDonald, I guess this is a continuation of this notion of just, I guess, unhappiness, that the invasion of Ukraine certainly has had an impact on the French economy, as it has on a number of countries' economies. And is France suffering the same inflation rates that the rest of us, the United States has been suffering? And then how much of that just kind of fuels this notion that you're just generally unhappy with the direction the country is going?
I was just about to say, I'm not sure about now being the spokesperson for French unhappiness. But anyway, as an expert in French unhappiness, I would say that, looking at my bills, they've certainly gone up. So just from a personal experience, my fuel bill has gone up. It's gone up more than 50%. So I personally am very unhappy. I don't really know what to add, apart from I think that the idea of Europe and Ukraine is a really interesting one, because the French have always, the French are very proud of being French. And this is one of the problems that I think is adding to French unhappiness, is this feeling of French losing its position in the world and its weight and its importance. So when Macron was talking to Putin at the beginning of the conflict, it was seen as a good thing for his electoral prospects. That's probably why he didn't bother to debate before the first round, is because he was too busy talking to Putin. And I think that people have seen what good that has done, which, is not much so far. I think that definitely there's a lot of flux and uncertainty about Europe's position in the world and France's position in Europe. And that's really quite central to the French identity.
And you listen to Scholar Circle, scholarcircle.org. We're discussing the French election and French society with Martin Shane of New York University, with Patrick Chamorro of the Stanford Center in Washington, and Flora MacDonald, a freelance journalist. Martin Shane, I guess then what's kind of lingering here is we're painting a picture of a French electorate that generally, is going to reject the status quo, generally fairly unhappy and extremely concerned with the future of France. So Is there an expectation that this is some real trouble for Macron, you know, next week? Or is this something that's more of a long-term issue of trouble for him?
How about both? I mean, it's actually very surprising how the survey projections of how he's going to do next week. It's a much closer election than anyone would have imagined, at least anyone I know would have imagined. And it's certainly the best that Marine Le Pen, or her father for that matter, has ever done. And in that sense, it doesn't matter whether she wins or loses. What matters is that she's not just that she's running, but she's doing extraordinarily well. The long term, I mean, I love listening to Fleur about unhappiness because it's the long term trend in France. Unhappiness is a given, and it doesn't seem to fluctuate with inflation. And in fact, the inflation rates now, as all of us will recall, although you know they are beginning to go up, they are certainly beginning to go up, particularly with the increased price of gas and oil. But the inflation rate now is nothing like what it's been in the past, when, for example, Mitterrand was running, when inflation rates were much, much higher than they are now. And the French don't seem to be voting about inflation, but they do vote, they certainly vote about short-term change. And the short-term change here is very disquieting. It's interesting that this actually, it's a wonderful discussion. It's interesting for me because we're not discussing right and left. We're not discussing political parties, we're not discussing any of the things that we have ordinarily discussed in the infinite number of years that I've been talking about these things with, you know, similar groups of people. We are discussing really very volatile things. We're discussing what may be happening tomorrow, and we're discussing what may move 1 or 2% of the vote, which is really very interesting. I don't recall any time in the past when this sort of discussion had really taken place. I'm presuming for everything I know, which is somewhat limited, that Macron will be reelected in the second round of the election, and that in the days before, the volatile movement will probably be towards him, mostly among people who will react against Marine Le Pen, who, you're right, I agree, she has run a much better campaign, a far better campaign than Macron. But there is something to consider. And that is, what will she do if she's elected? And what will Macron do if he's elected? I mean, issues really do count at some point, and what people will do really makes a difference. And I'm hoping, my biases are evident here, obviously, I'm hoping that those volatile electors who are wavering will say to themselves, what happens if she actually wins? Not if we tweak the nose of Macron, which is a very attractive thing to do. You know, this guy who seems to be very upper class, who's from the upper elite of the French education system, to tweak his nose is a very attractive thing to do. But what happens if we actually do it? What will she do? And we know part of the answer, and that is that Front National, that is the predecessor to the current Rassemblement National, has been around for a long time. It's been around since the 1980s. And they have won any number of elections at the local level. And the truth is that their policies at the local level have not been terribly popular. They actually have not done very well. And we don't examine that very much, but they've never been able to build their successes at the local level into a kind of national machine of the extreme right. It just hasn't happened. And they've had ample opportunity to do that. They've had huge anger about immigration, not the guys coming in now, not the Ukrainians, but huge anger about North Africans in particular, and Muslims coming into France, that they've had some success building upon, but you know, not that much where they actually govern. So here it is, a prospect that she could win. She actually could. A prospect she could actually win. What's she going to do?
And by the way, every time you mention that perception that it could be a closer election, so it tweaks the candidate, but what happens if they actually win? I'm having some some flashbacks to 2016, being here in the United States and some,
well, yeah,
some similarities there. But Patrick, I mean, what's striking is, I believe in 2017, for the runoff that Macron won by, was it 37 points? I mean, it was an absolute landslide. And no matter what, it is certain that that number will be considerably smaller if Macron does win. So
don't bet the house on it. Don't bet the house on it.
Don't bet the house that it'll be smaller.
Or as small as you think.
Well, yeah, but in any case, there's clearly something going on in French politics. So what's, it's always difficult to put in, you know, to look in a crystal ball and say, you know, what's going to happen, but do you have some ideas, some things you're looking for what this may say about the future of French politics?
There are many reasons, of course, why the score is going to be much tighter this time around. One of them is that Macron was not known at the time. He had no record. Now he has a record and he's fueled lots of discontent, as the Gilets Jaunes, among others, showed. The other thing is that the right, you know, has grown. So the left has shrunk somewhat, but the right has grown, and the far right even more. And where Éric Zemmour was a challenger, of course, to Marine Le Pen in the first round, in the runoff, it's going to be a plus for her, because that pool of voters is going to vote about 70% for her. And then there is the kind of the unraveling of the Front Républicain, which was this, you know, informal agreement among all parties to isolate the Front National or the Rassemblement National and never to strike any alliance with it. Well, as we see, you know, so many of Mélenchon's voters are going to vote for Marine Le Pen. And so this Front Républicain, I think, is full of cracks. It's going to be, yes, a Front Républicain, at least, you know, Emmanuel Macron pointing still to, you know, the specter of fascism, etc., which is a little ridiculous. But, you know, but he's trying to hold this Front Républicain together. And Marine Le Pen is holding the anti-Macron front. You know, it's one front against the other. You have to remember that both Marine Le Pen and Emmanuel Macron are political survivors. Le Pen, of course, you know, after our TV debates in 17 and her, you know, crushing defeat at the polls, and Macron because, you know, very few people thought he would survive the Gilets Jaunes, that he would not have to resign or that he would be competitive in his re-election. So it's amazing, actually, you know, to look at these two candidates and how resilient they have been, how much Macron, who is not a natural politician, but how much he's been is learned on the job, and Marine Le Pen also, how much she regained control of her party and kind of you know, she was considered even by her close entourage, first of all, to be, you know, beyond repair because she didn't master the issues as, you know, most people expect from a French president, you know, that they would master the issues and be able to, you know, be articulate about them. And then, you know, that she still didn't have any ally for the runoff. Well, now she doesn't have, allies, you know, institutional allies, but she has, you know, Zemmour and maybe part of the Mélenchon voters. And what's interesting actually is that, of course, not to repel, you know, the Mélenchon voters, she's not even talking about the Zemmour folks or Zemmour's program on immigration, crime, etc. Not at all. Both Macron and Le Pen are only talking about, you know, what the Mélenchon voters, of course, want, which is more, you know, socialist type, you know, economic policies and these kind of things. But so yeah, it can be and probably will be very, very close. I mean, I side with Martin, though, of course.
And with that, we are we're out of time, and we now know.
So sorry. Yeah, one more thing.
Oh, please.
Is that the main problem with The main issue with Macron, I mean, you can disagree with her policies, etc., is that she's widely incompetent and she doesn't have the folks around her that can manage, you know, the country. I think that's a major problem, and I think she would run into problem, you know, as a result of that. In addition to, of course, her policies.
And Front National has run into those sorts of problems at the local level. They've run into just those problems where they've governed, wherever they've governed.
So what you're painting a picture is no matter what happens on the 24th, there's going to certainly be governance, huge governance challenges within France, and these trends are likely, you know, to continue. So we've been discussing the French elections, French politics and society generally today. Our panel has been Martin Shane, professor of politics emeritus at New York University. He's the author of The Politics of Immigration in France, Britain, and the United States, A Comparative Study, and Shadows Over Europe, The Development and Impact of the Extreme Right in Europe. Patrick Chamorro, senior research scholar and lecturer at the Stanford Center in Washington. He's the author of France's Vanishing Center and The French Presidential Election, Can Macron Stay Ahead of the Pack? And Flora McDonald, a freelance journalist who works in print and radio and the author of a recent piece in Foreign Policy magazine, The Malaise, Poisoning French Politics. Thank you all very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you, Doug.
A special thanks to the Scholar Circle team, Maria Armudian, host and anchor, Ankine Agassian and Melissa Chiprin, managing producers, Sud Dongri, webmaster and production assistant. All Scholar Circle shows are archived on scholarcircle.org. You can find our podcast on Apple and Google Podcasts and iTunes. Please follow us on @ScholarCircle Twitter account, and please join our Facebook page. On behalf of the Scholar Circle team, I am Doug Becker. Thank you for listening.